If you wouldn't mind opening your Bibles, if you have it, to Exodus 20. The last time we were in Exodus was, I believe, 3 weeks ago. And I spent a good deal of time, I kind of explained the three uses of the law as theologians kind of unpack them, that the first and primary use of the law is to be a mirror by which we are shown our sin. An MRI is the kind of the thing that I use that diagnoses our problem, that shows us that we have a sin problem, that holds the standard up for us, if you will, and finds us wanting if we're honest with ourselves. And that's the first use of the law. That's to show us our sin. The second use of the law is as Christians to understand how we may please God. Those two uses are kind of in the really Christian-oriented uses of the law. They're meant to be the process by which people become Christians is really that thing. So the first use of the law is to expose our sin, reveal our need for a Savior, and the second use of the law is to help us in our Christian walk. If you think in terms of justification and sanctification, exposing our sin to us leads us to, if you think, you know, even in courtroom terms, the term justification means you've been justified, declared just. You've been declared innocent. And so in order to go through that process, you need to see your sin for what it is, to declare that and to ask for mercy, to ask for Christ's covering over you so that you might be declared justified. And from that moment, when you become a Christian, you are justified, that God sees you as holy and righteous, not because of your works, but because of the works of Jesus that have been given to you through his death and resurrection. That's that justifying work. Now, the second use of the law is that as Christians, we know that we still have these bodies. Paul calls it this body of death that we live in, that is constantly at war with our spirit, fighting for fleshly desires over spiritual desires. And so the law then, instead of becoming our accuser, the law becomes our path to pleasing God. As Christians now are not only have our hearts changed in that we had a heart of stone and now it's a heart of flesh, we used to have a heart that ran to wickedness, and now we have a heart that desires godliness. And so the law helps us to walk in godliness as Christians. So those two uses of the law, and I kind of focused on the first one mostly 3 weeks ago when I preached last, and how we should view the law as Christians, and talked about how we should have a heart of compassion, that the law should not be a sword that we use to wield. Now the third use of the law is kind of a general use of the law. It's more of something that is what would be considered a common grace. Whereas God gives grace in some respects to everyone who is alive. God allows air to be in the lungs of anyone who is living. God has given grace. There's lots of things that I would consider common grace. The ability to set your coffee maker to go off before you wake up is a common grace. That it's a grace that everyone experiences, right? There's lots of things that are the understanding beauty, understanding friendship, understanding love to some degree is something that God allows everyone to experience through his common grace. Now that doesn't save people, but it is a grace that God bestows upon people that they can understand and have a touch of what God is like and understand who he is. And the idea of the law, the third use of the law is to restrain evil. Is that common grace, that third understanding and use of the law. Now, it's kind of weird to think of the law as restraining evil. Like, I'm not sure if that concept is difficult for you to kind of grasp, but you think of it this way. When hearts are unregenerate, they seek after what will serve their own desires all the time. That's all you know, when before I was a Christian, that's all I sought after was my own desire. How can I get whatever I want out of this situation? Now, that might cause me to do something good. Might cause me to be nice to somebody. I remember when I was a teenager, I went to a lot of camps, and there were horse camps because I was riding horses, which you can make fun of me for later. But I was usually like one of five guys in a group of 45 girls. And I was one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. And it wasn't because I had a genuine desire to just be helpful to everyone. And I was very selective in who I was helpful with. You know, the cuter, more attractive girls got a lot of help from me. And so though my outward expression was very good, my heart desires were not. They were selfish intended. And so when we are unregenerated, people will constantly pursue their own desires. And so God, in order to curb that and keep that from becoming just completely rampant, he gives us, by common grace, these natural laws to give a buffer or to give a deterrent for people to act out on the fullness of their desires. This is kind of a strange example, but it's kind of what's in my head right now. I have Audible. I think I've mentioned this before. If you know what audible.com is, you can get audiobooks. And so I can zip through a few audiobooks depending on the length. I went through two in one day a week or so ago. But one I got that's rather long that I just finished this week it's called Helter Skelter, which if you're familiar, it's about the Charles Manson family murders, which I may have regrets about listening to this book because it kind of got in my head in a way. It even kept me up a couple nights just thinking about all of the craziness that was there. But if you know much about the Manson family, Charles Manson was this charismatic personality who had just had this awful history. He had this terrible growing up. He was in institutions for most of his life. But he also was very charismatic, and he had a following. People kind of flocked to him, and he had this hippie commune family group. And he convinced the people around him that there was nothing that was bad. The worst thing that you could do around Charles Manson is you could kill an animal. He would rather kill a person than kill an animal. And so he had twisted the logic and twisted morals so much in these people's minds that to them, to go out and kill somebody was not wrong. He had said, their thing was, there's nothing that's bad, everything is love. So he had this twisted logic, and I think that's a very kind of a microcosm of what can happen on a broad scale if we live in this relativistic society that increasingly more and more is what's good for you is good for anyone. And so the more we get away from God's law, the more that we see that happening time and time again, where people can distance themselves from the revealed law, the natural laws that God has put out. And so God, understanding that that's the way that human history will go, he has to put a stop, and he has to say, this is how far you are allowed to go. This is how far society can let you go before something happens. And so that's what we see God unpacking in these next, actually, several chapters in Exodus, is God unpacking several different types of laws about altars. He just went through the Ten Commandments, laws about slaves, laws about restitution. These are all laws about social justice. These are all things in many ways. Some of them are more ceremonial, and we'll talk about that probably the next time, is kind of the ceremonial laws and the moral laws. And there's another three distinctions that even further go with the laws that we're going to talk about. But today, mostly what I wanted to look at was God's stopping of evil, not letting evil get too far away. And here's what I wanted to focus on. I put in there a number of verses, but I'm just going to read a few verses, only about 32 verses instead of all of them. But I'm going to start in Exodus 21:1. Yeah. Now these are the rules that you shall set before them. When you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve 6 years. And the seventh, he shall go out free for nothing. If he comes in single, he shall go out single. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, my children, I will not go out free. And his master shall bring him to God, and he shall bring him to the door or the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall be his slave forever. When a man sells his daughter as a slave, he shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has broken faith with her. If he designates her for his son, he shall deal with her as with a daughter. If he takes another wife to himself, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, or her marital rights. If he does not do these three things for her, he shall go out for nothing without payment of money. Whoever strikes a man so that he dies shall be put to death. But if he did not lie in wait for him, but God let him fall into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place to which you may flee. But if a man willfully attacks another to kill him by cunning, you shall take him away from my altar that he may die. Whoever strikes his father or mother shall be put to death. That's pretty intense right now. Whoever steals a man and sells him, and anyone found in possession of him shall be put to death. Listen up, kids, on this next one. Whoever curses his father or mother shall be put to death. When men quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or with his fist, the man does not die but takes to his bed. If the man rises again and walks outdoors with his staff, he who struck him shall be clear. Only he shall pay for the loss of this time and shall have him thoroughly healed. When a man strikes his slave, male or female, with a rod, the slave dies under his hand. He shall be avenged. But if the slave survives a day or two, he is not to be avenged, for the slave is his money. When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. When a man strikes the eye of his slave, male or female, and destroys it, he shall let the slave go free because of the eye. If he knocks out the tooth of his slave, male or female, he shall let the slave go free because of his tooth. When an ox gores a man or a woman to death, the ox should be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall not be liable. But if the ox has been accustomed to gore in the past, and its owner has been warned, but has not kept it in, and it kills a man or woman, the ox shall be stoned, and the owner also shall be put to death. If a ransom is imposed on him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed on him. If it gores a man's son or daughter, he should be dealt with according to the same rule. If the ox gores a slave, male or female, the owner shall give their master 30 shekels of silver. The ox shall be stoned. Now, I'm just going to admit, there's a lot of kind of hard things to wrestle with. This actually is a passage of scripture that gets used a lot of times to condemn our understanding of the Bible. Oh, you like the Bible, right? So you believe that all these things, you know, it's okay to be, oh, this is the Bible condoning slavery. This is the Bible condoning all kinds of things. People will use these. And I think that's kind of a fair, if you read it for the first time, it's kind of like a, oh, it does seem to be doing that, doesn't it? But I want you to notice something. In your understanding of the law, you know, of God saying, here's my will, so that you see that you don't line up with it, and seeing that you need to become a Christian, here's my will so that you can live a Christian life. And then the third use of God saying, here's the parameters that I'm gonna put on your sin. Here's the things that I'm gonna stop. You know, you're allowed to, God allows us to sin in so many ways. Isn't that kind of a crazy thing? If you think about it, if you're God, the God of the universe, and you see people mocking you, you see people detesting you, you see people like the apostle, before he was Paul, Saul, persecuting your people time and time again, and he's just watching this happen and going, this is unjust, this is evil, this is unrighteous. If any of us were in that position, we might be inclined to just destroy him right away. We might be inclined to just, you know, zap them off the face of the earth because of the vileness of the sin, because of the wickedness and the hatred that is present in those sins. And God did that once, right? You have the story of Noah and the ark. That's God looking down at the wickedness of the earth and going, this is beyond control. This is just ridiculous. This needs to stop. And so he did that. He wiped them all out and started over with Noah. And then he made this promise, I'm not going to do that again. And so he begins to make these covenants, and he begins to have this people that is drawn to him. And he creates a people, the Hebrew people, and he still has to deal with their sin. And he still has to show them grace upon grace. It says in the New Testament that in his forbearance, he left the sins committed before unpunished. So here is God allowing sin to go. And so where, if you're in that position, how far are you gonna let it go? Where are you gonna put the mark? Well, he has to put the mark somewhere. And so he's restraining this evil. He's doing a lot in here he's saying, here's how far I'm gonna let you go. Beyond that, you're gonna have to deal with consequences. Beyond that, you're going to have to deal with retribution, and it's going to come from your people. And so God has to put these parameters on the people's sin. He has to restrain the evil that's going on, the evil of slavery, the evil that is people striking one another, the evil that is stealing, the evil that is slavery, the evil that he's putting parameters on this evil that is occurring in his people. And so this trend follows through and follows even now into our own day, where our laws and our justice system is based off of these similar laws. If you even look at some of the things, there's you know, manslaughter in here, and versus premeditated versus non-premeditated. You know, that's even here, you know, if he doesn't lie in wait, he's, you know, there's differences. This is God kind of laying out for his people, here's some guidelines for you as these things will happen. You know, these things are going to happen, and you're going to need a frame of reference to know how to deal with this in a just way. You're going to know how to deal with this. And furthermore, this is God setting up and defining for people what justice really is. What justice is, so that when we get to our day and age, many of our laws, many of our current justice system is based upon the rules that have been set out and laid out in Scripture. And these, you know, go on for pages and pages, and then you get to Leviticus, and oh my goodness, right? Now, some of these, as we'll get to later, some of them are ceremonial laws. Some of them, so we're going to ask the question later on, because these might be happening, how many of these apply to us today? Like, do I have to go, if you read some of Leviticus, do I have to stop eating, you know, a little medium rare steak? Do I have to grow my hair out long on the sides? Like, why aren't we doing those things, Brian? We'll get to some of that stuff, but right now I just wanted to look at how God, in his giving out the law, the use of restraining evil in our midst is a very powerful thing, and it's a common grace. It's something that we should be thankful for. And this is hopefully this transition works well. Because one of the things that we need to understand as Christians is that there are, In our own lives, we can look at the justice system and the laws that are in place as a grace that God has given us to restrain the evil that might come against our lives, to restrain the evil that might come into our existence. And in some respects, God's grace in setting out civil laws and just laws that become state laws, in some respects, that can be the grace and the means by which people come to know Christ. This is kind of transitioning a little bit into an understanding of Kairos prison ministry that we've talked about, some of the guys that we spent time with last week. That there is a place in our walks as Christians where we can read these civil laws and we can, I don't know how, like, compartmentalize a little bit. Like, if you think Old Testament, all that's kind of jacked up. That's old. God's angry. All this stuff. But to understand that these are, in some respects, these civil laws are protecting us. But they're from maybe evil that comes in. But sometimes they're protecting people from their own selves. If you know what I mean. Like, God says, here's how far you can go. And when there are laws that are in line with God's will and God's revealed word, there are people, if you were just allowed to go free range, you might go wherever. But the way that God has set it up is you're going to come against this thing, and it's going to put you on your back. Or it's going to take you to a place that you didn't want to go. Or you're going to end up somewhere where you had no idea. And so that may be what God uses in it. That is very often what God has used in many situations for people who have come against the law of God and wound up in prison. And so it's a very strange tie. As I was trying to think about how to not make this work, but it does work, and I hope I didn't make the transition too fast because I am trying to think about time here. But to understand that God's law is a protective to restrain evil also, it can protect us if we are one of those who ends up in a place in prison or being chastised or being punished for something that we have done. So that's one of the reasons I believe that God's grace is a gift, one, to the church and to his ones he loves to protect us, but also is a means to bring people to himself, that when they face that punishment, oftentimes it gives them the opportunity to hear the worst message of the gospel that they may not have heard had they been allowed to just go wherever they wanted to go. You know, the times when my kids are most receptive, I think, is usually after they've been disciplined. It's usually when they're the softest. It's usually when they're the most kind of even quiet, because they realize I messed up and I broke Dad's law, and so I need grace. So I've asked Cricket, many of you know Cricket Clark, if she would come up and share a little bit of her story, which I'm not going to give you too much of it, but I've been hearing Cricket's name for a couple years now and finally got to meet. How long have you been? Is we took a trip to D.C. together one day and ended up costing me $15 because I got on the HOV lane without realizing it, which they will take a picture of your license plate and send it to you. It was weird. But anyway, so we got to know each other a little bit there, and she's going to come and just share a little bit about her story as it pertains to this church and Kairos and all that, so.
And I can relate to everything he's saying because I'm one of those people who led a good life for a long time, had some bad things happen in my life, got divorced, lost my mom and dad real quick, and ended up being in a bad situation and grabbing hold of a man to take care of me when I shouldn't have. But I went down a dark path and ended up committing money crimes with him, and served 8 years in state prison for that. So I think I was one of those people that that God set down because I was out of control. When I got to Goochland, I was scared to death, Didn't know who I was, didn't know what I was going to do. I was only worried about me. It took me about a year to accept all that and to wake up and realize, okay, well, what do you need to do to change yourself so that this never happens again? Because my parents probably rolled over in their grave. But anyway, it was a learning experience. But I had heard about this program there called Kairos that was a prison ministry. And I had heard about the church there at Goochland was pretty good. So I started going to church and to Bible study. And I kept applying to get into Kairos and didn't get in. It took me 3 years to get in. But the chaplain told me that when God's time for you to be in, you'll get in. And so I went to Kairos. And Kairos gave me a place to get rid of my guilt and my shame, and to forgive myself. I already understood that God was going to forgive me, but I couldn't accept that. And I guess I came to understand that, well, who am I to say that he's not going to forgive me? I mean, who am I not to forgive myself if he can forgive me? So it took me a while with all that, but that Kairos weekend really opened my eyes to joy and love. I have never felt so much love from people in my whole life, and it felt so freeing to be able to talk about bad things that I had done or regrets that I had. And it really was the beginning of my turning myself around there in prison. And I went on to graduate from Southern Virginia Community College is a business software degree and a four-year maintenance apprenticeship there. I became a Kairos liaison there, which helped the Kairos women by being an angel with the inmates to facilitate things. I tried to spread the message of Jesus around the compound, and I would remind people to come to the reunions, and got real involved with church, and my whole life just turned around, and I started not being afraid. I had no family, so I knew I was going to be homeless when I got out. But I just let God handle everything, and I didn't worry about it. But when I went to I had to go to Riverside Jail, which was like a work release, and my Kairos women friends brought me to church here. And I loved it, and everybody here is so nice. And I want people to know that just because you've made a mistake doesn't mean you can't turn your life around. And now I'm able to do volunteer work with Kairos, and I love to help people and serve and give back any way I can. I still have a relationship with my daughter that's not restored, but I pray for that. But I know that God will take care of that, and I know that as long as I've tried to reach out to her, then I have to put it in his hands, because I can't let things like that drive me crazy. So it's been a long journey, but I really love it here. And I think my faith is increasing all the time. I still do worry about a few things, but I have a good job. I have a place to live. I have my wonderful Kairos friends, and I have church here, and I'm just very happy. And so I would like to encourage anybody who could possibly serve on a Kairos team to please do, because even if a little seed gets planted, it grows. And I've seen in that prison how many lives had been changed. And also, not only from that, but from the inmate who attended Kairos, how they have changed influences the other women there as well. So I hope that you all have a chance to maybe serve on a Kairos team sometime. And that's about all I want to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Cricket.
And so I think that there's often times when in God's amazing and incomprehensible plan, where he allows us to be a part of redemption. You know, when we look at laws and we look at things that are you know, some of these statutes and some of these laws, it's very easy to point a finger and say, well, you crossed the line and that's where you deserve to be. And yet there's this story of redemption that's taking place that we get to be a part of, and we get to see God do amazing things through us. And that can be in any capacity. That can be just in prayer support. That can be in just supporting those who go, those who care, and those who go into the ministry. The guys that I was with last week at Deep Meadow, I had to stop because of all the sickness in our family, so I missed the last day. But just hearing some of the stories of the way that God was ministering to those men in the prison is pretty powerful. So as we think about law, this kind of goes hand in hand with the last time I preached about it. Our ultimate reaction should be compassion. Our ultimate reaction as Christians should be compassion, that the law, even though it does restrain evil, and even though it does keep us safe in many ways, sometimes it does keep us safe from ourselves. And so we need to have compassion on those who maybe have stepped over. And so I think if we've got, we're also going to watch a video about Kairos as well. Is that ready back there? Okay, so let's show that now.